Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Touch Free Form Radio. Thank you for making this show a part of your Saturday morning, wherever you may be. The first show of the month of August, and it's been quite a busy morning, to say the least. And that's probably putting it lightly, but it's been a very busy morning, to say the least. There was a piece of news that broke this past week, and frankly, it actually blew me by surprise. Almost blew me away, but not completely. It's been a while since we've talked hockey on the show. It's been a minute. But today, I'm actually going to make an exception. I'm going to make an exception. Because for this segment and this segment only, there is a particular topic of discussion and conversation as you can join in the conversation at 855-915-WMFO. That's 855-915-9636. That actually caught my eyes and my attention. So, for the longest of time, the fans of the Boston Bruins have complained about how Tuukka Rask is overpaid. He gets paid so much money for the lack of success he's had in the playoffs, all that fun stuff. And some criticism has been right and fair. Some way, way, way over the top. Others? Downright unfair. Listen. I, for myself, have been one of the biggest critics of Tuukka Rask in the last few years. I have. But this past postseason, I have given him a great deal of compliment and respect. I have. Because here's the thing. He's earned it. He's earned it. But he's still got to win the Stanley Cup. So, when the news broke about Tampa Bay Lightning goaltender Andrei Vasilevskiy signing, wait for it, 8-year, $76 million contract extension with the Tampa Bay Lightning. My first reaction was, what? 8 years, $76 million. So, for those who aren't good with math, that's an average of $9.4 million per year for a goaltender. And for a goaltender, that is an absolute, that's a lot of money. It is. It absolutely is. What makes it even more outrageous is that when you talk about Tuukka Rask, with how much money he's getting paid, This season, he's getting paid $6.5 million. This season, this upcoming season. And Vasilevskiy, he's going to get paid just almost $3 million more annually. Especially this. Next season, not this season, the 2019-2020, the following season, the 2020-2021 season, Rask will be making $6.5 million per year. Vasilevskiy, with his new contract extension of 8 years, $76 million, average annual value of $9.4 million. I don't want to hear from the Boston Bruins fan base as to Tuukka being overpaid. Tuukka, he's paid too much money for a guy who is yet to win a cup. I'm going to tell you why. I can't even begin to tell you how many times I've actually heard this. Like, see, I really can't. And what makes it even more hilarious now in saying all of that is the Tampa Bay Lightning have just paid a guy who was yet to win a playoff round. Try that. How about that for your apples? The Tampa Bay Lightning had decided that they were going to give Vasilevskiy $9.4 million per year on his new deal, his new contract extension, for a player who has yet to have won a playoff round. Absurd. And I do mean genuinely absurd. To me, this has got to be one of the most absurd yet dreadful decisions that organization has made. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to honestly tell you why. Number one reason, you've committed just under $10 million to one guy, one position. I get the goalie is important. No one's undermining the goalie, frankly. No one. However, what I need you to understand right here, right now, is that with that amount of money comes a greater deal of responsibility to win and win now. Not the future. Not the future. Now. Because frankly, the Boston Bruins, $6.5 million this upcoming season, listen, with a cap of $7 million, listen, I understand the ire and the frustration with Rask, with people saying that Rask, for a guy who gets paid that much, he should be stealing games in the playoffs and the Stanley Cup Finals. Yada, yada, yada. I get it. But I also need you guys to also understand this. You should never complain again in terms of Tuukka Rask. Why? Because ultimately, what you have to understand is this. What you have to understand is that Vasilevskiy, yes, he just won the Vezina. Great. Tuukka Rask also won a Vezina. But he's gotten the Bruins to two Stanley Cup Finals in 6 years. In 7 years. Like, I am more amazed, genuinely, by the absurdity of that contract. Because I'm telling you right now, I'm going to call it right here, right now, live on this show, that the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to absolutely regret that deal in 4 years. They're going to regret it. And then on top of that, the Bruins, for all of their cap issues, listen, the one positive in all of this is that after this upcoming season for the Bruins, Ross has got one more at $6.5 million. So fortunately, and I do mean fortunately, it is a good thing and also concerning. As for what the Bruins are going to do next, because we got guys that are going to be due for massive contracts soon. Bergeron's contract is going to expire after 2021, if I'm not mistaken. Rask, also another one. And you still got to give long-term deals to Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo. So, with that being said, I really do think and believe that when you talk about the Boston Bruins and the fans not complaining, I will tell you this for a fact right now. After the contract that the Lightning just gave to Vasilevsky, don't ever complain. Don't not ever complain again about how much money Rask is getting paid, because those days are done. Those days are done. And we have great young defensemen. I agree. Especially with McAvoy and Carlo. Those two guys are going to be a top two pairing, I believe, on this team for years to come. But they're due for a new deal because their rookie deals are expiring or have expired. So, with all of that being said, appreciate what we have now in Tuukka Rask, now more than ever, especially after the run that he just went on, especially after taking us to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Although he didn't win it, and he can't do the job by himself, the money that he's getting paid, I strongly believe it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. It's worth all in which that the Bruins having had decided that they were going to commit to him long term at the end of the 2012-13 strike shortened season and lock him to an 8-year, $56 million deal. That itself was something that I would say it paid off, but with a mixed bag of results. It did. No question. It absolutely did. So, I'm absolutely interested in seeing what happens next. Especially with the situation in regards to Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo. But as for what Tuukka Rask is making money-wise, I don't want to hear it from Bruins fans. I do not want to hear it now, and I sure do not want to hear it come the season starts in September or preseason in training camp and at all during this upcoming regular season. I don't want to hear it. I just don't. Because at this point, look for the South and your arch rival in your division, the Tampa Bay Lightning. They decided they're going to pay a man $9.4 million per year coming up. So, with all that being said, coming up next, we're going to have Anton Staley join the show live. He's going to join us live for a live on-air interview as we talk NFL training camp, as well as we're going to touch on some Patriots notes as well. So you're definitely going to want to stay tuned to that. This is the Shukri Wright Show. And this is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Shook Free Rights Show. This is Shook Free Rights, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tuss Reform Radio. And we are joined on the air now with Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports. And thank you for joining in this morning, Antoine. How's it going, man?
All right, Dad. How are you doing?
Can't complain. You know, football's back. And I got to admit, just watching the Hall of Fame game on Thursday night definitely brought back excitement as for another NFL season coming up. I got to ask you, what is one headline that already has captured your attention this NFL training camp? For me, it certainly has been the ongoing building of chemistry between Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr.
I think the Browns are definitely interesting team to look at that dynamic. You got a lot of personalities there, a lot of new parts, also new head coach there, Freddie Kitchens. So I'm definitely interested to see how that's going to work out. For me, also, I think it's some of the holdouts as well. You talk about Ezekiel Elliott. I do think that's going to get solved. I don't think that's like the Melvin Gordon situation where it seems like the Chargers and him are heading towards the divorce. It's just a matter of the timing's really bad. Obviously, training camp and preseason is about to start up, and the Chargers are also a team that's contending for a Super Bowl bid. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how that's going to end up. Obviously, I don't think that's going to end up in well. But, yeah, I think those are the two headlines that kind of grab my attention as well. And some of the other holdouts in the league there as well. I know Michael Thomas was a holdout, too, as well, before they got a deal done there as well. So, yeah, that's really caught my attention this last summer.
You know, you mentioned about Melvin Gordon, and the thing that's really got me concerned, especially for the Chargers, especially when you look at that division, that is a division where you have to have a running game. And I understand you have Derek Carr with the Raiders. Yep, obviously Patrick Mahomes entering his second full season as a starter quarterback for Kansas City, and Melvin Gordon is that wild card factor in that division. So if he, in fact, does get traded, how do you think it will impact the Los Angeles Chargers moving forward in terms of this season as well as next season?
Well, I'm sure this season they would probably tell you they went 4-0 without Melvin Gordon last year. So on the Chargers end, that's probably why they don't want to pay him that much money. And not to mention, Gordon is really a vicious running back that takes on a lot of punishment and the wear and tear on his body. They're not really sure if he's going to be able to keep up. And I don't think he's worth $14 million either. I think that's the type of money you give an Ezekiel Elliott or a Todd Gurley or Saquon Barkley, those running backs of the world. I think Melvin Gordon is probably a tier under that. And if you're the Chargers, they probably feel like, well, we can go get a running back anywhere, and I think we'll be fine. And I think they will. I still think they're going to make the playoffs. It is a matter of when it comes down to personal situations in the playoffs, you definitely need a running game, as you saw with the Patriots last year.
Yeah.
Even with Tom Brady, they relied on their running game. So, yeah, I think they could get to the playoffs. I think they could win a division even without a consistent running game or running back by committee. But, yeah, when it comes down to crunch time with the playoffs, you definitely need that running back to rely on.
We're talking with Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports live on the Shook Free Rights Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. My next question to you is this, and we're sticking with running backs, because the one thing that I've noticed is that, and along with Melvin Gordon, who's a good running back in his own right, however, he's not on the same plateau as an Ezekiel Elliott. Now, as you mentioned, in terms of holdouts, Elliott is a guy whose contract still runs for another couple of years, his rookie contract, that is. And if you're the Cowboys, how concerned should you be in regards to getting a deal done, especially when you talk about his importance to the Dallas Cowboys offense?
Yeah, he definitely has to be a little bit concerned because he's the engine that runs everything offensively. Even more than Dak Prescott. That's not to take away anything from Dak Prescott, but Ezekiel Elliott is the best player they have offensively, and especially even if you consider an offensive lineman. But yeah, he makes that engine go. He's led the league in rushing twice the last 3 years. The Cowboys also saw the benefit, what they were without him. When he was suspended for 6 games, and clearly they weren't the same team. Dak Prescott was the same quarterback, and you definitely need him if you're going to contend for a Super Bowl. The problem they're facing is also playing Dak Prescott, also Amari Cooper, Jalen Smith, also a linebacker for the Cowboys, also coming up for a contract too soon as well. So it's hard to pay everybody in the NFL, especially with the salary cap situation, although the money keeps going up and up. But yeah, that's the problem you face. You trying to pay everybody at the same time, especially when you drafted well. So they're in an interesting dynamic. I definitely think they'll get the three offensive players done, and that Ezekiel Elliott and Amari Cooper. It's just a matter of how they're going to spread all that money out, because they only have $23 million under the cap right now.
Yeah.
They definitely can't pay everybody, at least not this year. They may have to wait. Somebody's going to have to wait until next year to get paid.
You know, when you talk about the Cowboys, I personally am a big believer in culture. And I talked about it in my opening segment for this show this morning that culture is the one factor in which that could either build franchises or tear them apart. In the case of the Dallas Cowboys, you're trying to reestablish yourself in terms of being a Super Bowl contender. I think they are a playoff contender, but Super Bowl contender, not just yet. Do you think that Ezekiel Elliott's actions is negatively impacting the Dallas Cowboys locker room in terms of what they're trying to establish?
No, I don't. I mean, I just think that money is just about trying to set yourself up financially, to be completely honest. If you look at the Cowboys years ago when they were in the run with Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin,
yeah.
Emmitt wasn't happy that Thurman Thomas was the highest paid running back in football, and he sat out for 2 games because of it. Obviously, some people would question that team's culture, but at the end of the day, they ended up winning 3 out of 4 Super Bowls. So, yeah, I definitely think that this is just all about business. It's not necessarily about the team. I know some people would say, well, they get upset about the situation. I know in Cleveland, Duke Johnson wants to be traded, and Baker Mayfield is kind of inserting himself into the situation, which I don't think he should, because that's that man's money, and he wants to be in a certain situation. But I just think it's about getting paid and trying to, especially if you're a running back, trying to get paid as much as you can, as fast as you can, because the running back position is just so demanding.
We're talking with Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports here live on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, for those who are just joining in live. And the next question I want to touch on, and this is one of the things that has really intrigued me in terms of the headlines for the upcoming season. As someone like yourself who was pretty well familiar with football in the Southeast, especially whether it's the NFC South or the AFC and the AFC East or AFC South, I am intrigued as to how the NFC South is going to shape out, especially when you talk about Carolina and Cam Newton coming back from shoulder surgery, as well as the New Orleans Saints, and as well as you can't forget about the Atlanta Falcons. How do you think that division will shape out, and as well as who do you think will make the biggest impact in that division in terms of overall seeding?
Well, I mean, we've seen it before through all three of those teams that made playoffs in 1 year, so it's no reason to say that can't happen again. With Dan Quinn, you talk about the Falcons, I saw with them. Dan Quinn's taking on play calling defensively.
Yeah.
And we know what the Falcons have offensively. Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman is back from his injury. He was hurt a majority of majority of last year.
Yeah.
You get a really potent offense there. Defensively, they definitely still have some questions, but again, that's why Dan Quinn, who's come from a defensive background, is going to take over. And I think they have a chance also to make the playoffs and possibly win the division. I think everybody will point to the Saints just because they're the ones that's been winning the division the last few years. And I mean, rightfully so, they definitely have. They're one of the few teams that have been back-to-back winners of the NFC South that they've constructed within the last decade or so. But Carolina, you look at them, they were 6-2 at one point before Cam Newton got hurt. I definitely think that him recovering from the shoulder surgery, somebody has recovered from the shoulder, and all indications have, as far as watching through and everything, he's recovered from the shoulder surgery. I think the Panthers, especially what they have going for them defensively and also on the offensive end, it's well getting Greg Olsen back and having two really dynamic receivers in DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel. I think they have a position as well. So it could be a situation where the NFC South is definitely one of the toughest, if not the toughest, division of football again, and I really like what the Panthers have done so far, and I probably would slightly favor them over the Saints, but I definitely think it's a situation where you could have at least two teams make the playoffs out of the South.
We're talking with Anton Staley of Athlon Sports, live on the Shooky Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO. This one particular headline caught me by surprise this past week, and I was talking about it a little less than an hour ago on the show, and this is in regards to Michael Bennett in terms of the Patriots. And he had missed the first 3 days of training camp, and when he returned, he mentioned in great detail about what happened in regards to the conversation that he had with head coach Bill Belichick. And it got me thinking. At the end of it all, he was essentially saying that he respects Belichick as to how he treated him throughout this process, and as well as that he wants to play for him even harder. My question to you is, when you hear a player talk about Bill Belichick in this matter, do you think that Belichick has changed his way of how he's dealt with players as compared to how he dealt with them in the past? Or do you think this is a byproduct of a special case for Bennett given some of the troubles that he's dealt with in the past?
Well, he's given players who's had trouble issues in the past opportunity. Look at Randy Moss.
Yeah.
Randy Moss was people were ready to give up on him. They thought his best days were behind him. He comes from Oakland. He had read him off and essentially quit on the Raiders. He kind of quit on the Vikings, too, actually, at that point. And then he came to New England and becomes not only one of the best receivers in football. Again, I really think that his years with the Patriots really is going to make him a first ballot Hall of Famer, when I don't think he would have been prior to that. So, yeah, he's definitely taking on personalities that doesn't necessarily pass. Chad Johnson, I know that didn't necessarily work out, but he definitely, that was a risk for him and the Patriots at the time. But yeah, he's definitely been, he's tough with taking some players that hadn't necessarily been in good situations prior to that and decided to trade for them or sign for them. Sometimes it's worked out. Corey Dillon, also another situation of that as well. It's been plenty of cases where he's done that. He's about trying to win football games. And if Belichick believes he can win football games with you, then he will definitely try to bring you to his team and see how it works. So, but yeah, he's done this in the past, and I believe he'll continue to do that so long as he can help the Patriots win and just buy into that coach.
And speaking of the Patriots, I'm actually surprised at this point that Belichick has not given Tom Brady the contract extension as of yet, as this season is his walk year. He'll become an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. How do you see this situation playing out in regards to how Belichick wants to approach this contract, which could potentially be his last one for Brady, and as well as how does he view this type of situation? Does he use it to potentially make the transition from Brady to Jarrett Stidham, the quarterback that's now waiting in wing to take over as a starter here in New England?
I mean, obviously Brady's, if you look at his age and everything, I don't think he's going to go anywhere. So long as Brady wants to play, he's playing at a high level. I definitely think he's going to continue to play for the Patriots. So, yeah, I mean, everybody knows, especially in this situation, that he's going to be with the Patriots so long as he's playing at a high level. So I don't think it's necessarily that dire of a situation, at least not as of yet. But, yeah, you got Jarrett Stidham, who they took from Auburn, a guy who's not necessarily ready to play in the league right now, but a guy that had definitely showed a lot of potential in college, won some big games, beat Alabama, also while he was there at Auburn, and played for the SEC championship. So, yeah, he's done a lot of really good things, just inconsistent, has some things he needs to work on. Tom Brady, Tom Brady coming out of Michigan definitely was a sixth round pick and had a lot of things he needed to work out as well. But he got into the Patriots program, learned under Drew Bledsoe, and ended up becoming the best, arguably the best quarterback of all time. So, yeah, I definitely think that they just want him to sit and possibly see how he performs maybe next year and see if he can be that heir apparent. But for right now, I definitely think, even though you look at the contract situation, I definitely think that Brady's going to be there, whether one way or the other.
The NFC North is a division where I feel there is no shortage of headlines and potential storylines as to how this division will unfold. And I'm interested in getting your thoughts as, one, Aaron Rodgers, for the first time in a little more than a decade, won't have Mike McCarthy there as head coach anymore, as well as the Chicago Bears, Mitchell Trubisky, as well as Minnesota, looking at the situation with Kirk Cousins and so forth. How do you think the NFC North will shape out, and as well as who do you think will ultimately emerge in that division, given that Aaron Rodgers is coming back, off of what I would say was a down year, because given that he was not healthy, and with the new offense in Green Bay?
Well, I'll say this: people were saying it was a down. I mean, the man was due to an interception. Now, I know he had like 25 touchdowns, which it's not a lot in this standard of the NFL, but it's not like was throwing a ton of errors. The touchdowns are good. They're really good, obviously, but the two interceptions were really good. I think that stands out to me more than anything. That means he didn't turn the football over. It was a lot that he had to deal with last year, to be completely honest. So you look at Rodgers, new head coach, another head coach for the first time other than Mike McCarthy, who had been there dating back to the Brett Favre years. I definitely think that they're going to have, he feel like he has something to prove, to prove that he's still the best quarterback in football, at least one of the best quarterbacks in football. I think he's definitely going to try to prove that. They're definitely an intriguing team to watch this year. I'm curious to see how they're going to play defensively, but you never can count the Packers out as long as Aaron Rodgers is playing there. You look at the Bears. The defense, Khalil Mack, made such a big difference last year on that team. And the big thing is, Vic Fangio leaves and goes to Denver. He's the head coach there now.
Yeah.
You got Chuck Pagano there defensively. How is that going to look? Are they going to be just as good defensively? I'm not necessarily sure, but they definitely got to rely on that defense once again if they're going to win the division. Minnesota's the team I really like. I know a lot of people were kind of down on them considering how Cousins played last year.
Including myself,
I definitely think I like the Vikings. They're good defensively. They have two really good receivers, and Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. They're Kyle Rudolph there at the tight end position.
Yeah.
Dalvin Cook is the running back. They're probably the most talented team out of any team in the North. And Detroit is always a team that, you know, every now and then they'll sneak up and surprise people and make the playoffs. Matt Stafford definitely had a down year last year. Matt Patricia, but his first year coaching there in Detroit, Learning, still learning. Took it on the chin a lot last year, especially Monday Night Football. So you can never count them out too totally, but that's definitely an interesting dynamic in the division. I probably would pick the Vikings just slightly right now, but it's probably a three-team race, to be completely honest. But yeah. I definitely wouldn't sleep on Detroit too much either, considering the fact that they have a really good defensive front, especially signing Mike Daniels is definitely and also Troy Flowers is definitely really going to help that defense.
No, for sure. Last question before I let you go. Give me your early Super Bowl 54 prediction. Who emerges out of the NFC and who emerges out of the AFC?
I hadn't even thought about it yet, but you got to put me on the spot right now. Yeah, I really haven't thought about it yet. To be completely honest with you. But
it wasn't my intention, but it was definitely something that's definitely been percolating since the start of training camp. And you know, as I look across the league, and I just can't help that, you know, like in the NFC, I feel like it's totally wide open right now. I mean, you can make a legitimate case that seven teams have a chance to come out of the conference to play in Super Bowl 54. And in the AFC, I mean, right now it's two teams, maybe two and a half teams at that. Yeah, the Patriots, Kansas City, and maybe, and I do mean maybe, maybe the Chargers, maybe. But in the NFC, you have seven teams, so it's not a clear-cut choice, although the Rams are the defending NFC champions and so forth, but it was definitely something I had to ask.
You're forgetting the team in the AFC that I would also take note of. I would say the Colts.
You're right. Andrew Luck, yeah.
I definitely would put the Colts in that category as well, as long as Andrew Luck plays the way he did, which is the MVP level last year.
Yeah,
I would definitely put the Colts up there, and along with, I would put the Chargers there. I mean, simply because they've shown they can beat the Chiefs, and so I would definitely, and there's still some questions with the Chiefs defense, so I definitely would put, that would be my top four as far as contenders. Outside of that, yeah, it kind of gets a little murky after that. You kind of have to try to find a team. Even though some teams obviously used to make the playoffs last year, but I don't know if they're Super Bowl contenders from other than outside of just being playoff contenders. But yeah, I would definitely put the Colts in that category as being Super Bowl contenders as well.
Thank you so much for joining the show live this morning, man. Like, I mean, you being my first live radio guest on this show is definitely quite an honor for me personally, and as well as being able to talk NFL training camp, and as well as look forward to the season ahead. So thank you so much for joining the show live.
All right, dude, thanks for having me, Dan. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, talk to you soon. Thank you so much. That was Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports joining us live on the Sugar Right Show on 91.5 FM WMFO. Coming up next, we are going to unveil the newest segments that you'll hear on this show live every Saturday. Every Saturday on this show, you'll hear this new segment that I'm about to that's about to debut right now. Coming up next, this is the Sugar Right Show. And this is Shukri Wright, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tusk Free Farm Radio. We were supposed to go on music break, but there seems to be a bit of a technical issue here. So we'll move ahead, and we're going to debut the new segment that you will hear every week on this show, and I gotta give a big shout out to my good friend Vicky, who actually came up with this idea. So much thanks to you, Vicky. The segment is going to be called Shukri is Right. Shukri is Right, and this segment is not just going to be only as it pertains to sports, but rather life in sports in general. So this is what we're going to talk about this week on the newest segment of Shukri is Right. We're going to talk about LeBron James. And I can't help but think to myself, after seeing and hearing about the criticism that LeBron has faced after showing a great deal of enthusiasm and supporting for his son, who's playing in, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was an AAU game. And the criticism that he faced, I thought it was actually quite appalling. I'm going to tell you why. And this is really sad to say, but how many men in general, but I'm going to be really specific here. How many men of color can say honestly that they have that their father is in their lives one way or another, supporting them, cheering them on, and so forth? Because if there's one thing that I really am bugged by, it is the fact that people are more upset with the way what LeBron was conducting himself than the fact that he was actually just being a dad. LeBron already plays in the NBA, one of the best players of all time. He's done everything you could have done in the sport. He's just being a dad, cheering on his son. And for a lot of people, for whatever reason, it bothers them. And I don't understand that. I really don't. Personally, I think it's foolish. I think it's absolutely foolish that we're even having a conversation about, was LeBron doing too much? Was he acting too, quote unquote, ratchet? Or the fact that, what was he doing in the first place? Like, I mean, really, this is absurd. If as a man who was fortunate to grow up with a father, all you ever ask for is for your father to support you in what you choose to do. LeBron James Jr. has that. His father was his biggest fan, his biggest cheerleader. Was he a little over the top? Yeah, maybe. But so what? So what? If it bothers you that much, then I'm sorry, I don't know what else to tell you. Get a life. Because you know something? Everything that he does is not your business. It's not your business. If he decides to go out with his kids to have some ice cream, he's having avocado ice cream and his kids are having cookie dough, mint chocolate, whatever. That's none of your business. So what? The man He is a grown man. He's a grown man and a father. Instead of getting on him for what he did, how about this? Try applauding the fact that he was there as a father, cheering on his son. Because let me tell you something. Growing up a man of color in this country, sadly, there aren't too many fathers around. Due to the high incarceration rate, unfortunately. And to have a father in your life cheering you on as you pursue your dream and your aspiration, what more can you possibly ask for? Seriously. And it's quite irritating when I read through the comments on Twitter and I see some of the commentary, including Skip Bayless, tear him apart like, really? Are you that honest? Are you honestly that salty? Come on. Come on now. Totally unacceptable. You know, and I'm going to take it a step further. LeBron James has been an outstanding face of the NBA, on the court and off the court. No question. Even more so in the 1 year since that he opened up the I Promise School in his hometown of Akron, Ohio. And we're going to sit here and start complaining and ripping him for celebrating excessively with air quotes? Are you kidding me? I mean, people really need to get a grip. Really need to get a grip. I was going to go on music break, but I'm going to dive right into the final thoughts segment of this show to wrap it up. Today is single-handedly the most important day of the Red Sox, for the Red Sox this year. No question. Right now, they're 4 games out of the second wild card. And on top of that, they're also are facing a grim reality that they can't escape from. If they lose both games today, they're now 6 games out of the wild card. And at that point, you really might as well just start looking ahead to 2020. Seriously. I've seen too much of this team this year to recognize and know that they are who they are. And Dombrowski not making a move, whether he was going to be a buyer or a seller at the trade deadline, is truly a darnation of his inability to own up to the colossal mistake of not adding to the bullpen to replace the losses that he had in losing Kimbrel and Joe Kelly after the World Series. That right there tells you everything you need to know. So, with that being said, desperation time already passed. So whatever Alex Cora chooses to do now, you're just trying to save face. That's all it is. That's all it is. And at the end of the day, if you're the Red Sox and you got to face the real possibility that you don't make the playoffs a year after you win the World Series, do you understand how much of a colossal failure that really will be? And I'm telling you, if that were to happen, some major changes need to be made. It needs to be made for now and as well as for the future of this organization. Before I officially sign off, I want to give a very special thank you to Antoine Staley for coming on to the show this morning. First live guest for this brand new show. And also, thank you to my friend Vicky, who came up with the idea of naming the new segment Shukri Is Right. This will be a reoccurring thing every Saturday moving forward. And I can't wait to see what happens over the next several days. Especially in regards to the Red Sox moving forward. The Patriots, they'll be starting up joint practices with the Detroit Lions. So that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And we'll be here to talk about it next week. And don't forget, Thursday is the first preseason game for the Patriots. So next week, we'll be talking about some observations that were made from that game. As football is absolutely back with week one of the preseason, full slate of games. Cannot wait this Thursday night. This has been the Shukri Wright Show. And this is Shukri Wright. Thanks for listening to the Shukri Wright Show, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO. Stay tuned. Mike's on Mike is coming up next. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Morning, everybody. It's Mike on the mic here at WMFO just before 9 a.m. And I am here today with...
Yeah, you want to...